Welcome to I See What You Mean, a podcast about how people get on the same page or don't, or perhaps shouldn't. Today my guest is Bill Stanton. Bill's a colleague with a career in electrical construction, LED lighting, sales, and service. Bill, welcome to the show.
How you doing, Lou? Good to see you this morning.
It's good to see you.
Yes.
So give listeners a short bio about yourself, Bill.
So I'm 51 years old. When I was 17 years old, I was working for a silk screening company, and my uncle got me a job with a coworker that does electrical. Mm-hmm. And he had an available spot for an apprenticeship, and it was a non-union company. And I worked for them for about a year and a half to two years, and they got an opportunity to do a union job. So they entered the union, and they gave me a choice if I wanted to stay on the non-union side or go to the union side. And after speaking with my uncle and a couple other people that I trust in opinion, they said, Billy, the way to go is in the union. And I got into the union. I did a 5-year apprenticeship, and 30 years later.
You still carry that card, don't you?
I still have the card. I shelved it about 10 years ago because LED lighting became started to become very popular.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite there yet, Lou. So like a standard bulb that you screw into a lamp weighed 2 pounds.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
because for heat sink, yeah, the biggest thing with LEDs is keeping the heat away from the chips. And it was painful in the beginning, but it got better. And I basically got into sales and installation of these products because all of the utility companies, not all of them, but a lot of them started giving rebates on them.
Yeah.
So, and it would cover 50, 60, 70% of the project, sometimes more. And I was like, wow, this is a good gateway to a business, especially when you can get somebody to cover half the money for a customer.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that in the LED for over 10 years now. And my business did very well. And then my area dried up. Long Island's a small little area. And then I got offered a job from a LED lighting manufacturer to help them with sales and service, with any warranty issues they may have, and explaining to a customer from a different angle.
Right.
So Lou, I came from a blue collar world.
Yeah.
Made it into white collar world. So I'm a gray collar guy.
You are.
And I had my gray sweatshirt on.
Well, when I worked with you, you were in that in between place, in between position or role, and you knew. So let's talk more about that, because that's very interesting. You know, the podcast is called I See What You Mean. It's about that sort of that aha moment we all have from time to time, when you could be talking to an executive, you could be talking to your wife. When you have that moment where you go, oh, okay, I see what you're saying. With that aha flash, I see what you mean. And it's about how, what that has to do with getting on the same page. You've moved between the blue collar world and the white collar world, and Bridget, you might have spent a career getting people on the same page about different things.
Yes.
But you call yourself, you know, the gray collar. So what's that? Tell me more about what that means.
So because I came from the blue collar world, and then when you're sitting at a board meeting with people that are, it's different perspectives.
Right.
So I'm going into the meeting, figuring out the best product that would work for the customer, right? I have to make the customer happy, and I have to make the executive happy, the company that's selling the project. So it's a fine line, you know, when you go through a negotiation, right? If you have two parties, and they're both a little upset about it at the end, but they both realize it's beneficial. I have to find that happy meeting.
Good outcome, right?
Right. So, but when you go, when I first got into the white collar area or up until now, when you come in with this New York accent and a pair of jeans, and maybe my shoes and my outfit is from Target or Kmart, and theirs is from Louis Vuitton, they might look at you a little differently.
Yeah, they do.
But at the end of the day, I put all the data together, tell them how I can save them more money and have a better outcome at the end of the project.
That's funny because you're right. The image could cause concern, but yes. Then I know you, let's say your technical expertise is solid, but I also knew that your business acumen was pretty sharp. You understood what the business concern was of the customer, client.
Correct.
So although he or she might look at you when the meeting starts as, uh-oh, who's this guy? You said, at the end, I think they were won over by your solid credibility.
Right. So facts are facts, Lou, right? If I put something on this piece of paper, 2 + 2 = 4. But I had to show the customer these facts. I had to show the people I was answering to up top that were selling the job.
Yeah.
These numbers, like, here you go. Like, it wasn't just, oh, whatever this guy says,
right,
we're going to roll with.
Right.
Right. You have the proof. The proof's in the pudding. Right. And and like I said, you know, Lou, it's funny. Living on Long Island, born and bred here, 51 years, but I've been traveling the last 6 or 7 years. I used to think everybody else had an accent. I didn't realize people can pick, they know what state or what region I am from.
Right, right.
I couldn't tell what region they were from if I met them at an airport.
Right, right.
You know, from down south or whatever.
But, right.
So I do come off a little aggressive and strong, and I don't mean to.
No.
I'm passionate.
Right? Yeah,
so
yeah.
I just want to get my point across, and I want to be heard.
So tell me, and I know that to be true, because tell me about the perspective of the two perspectives, maybe of the client you're selling to, installing for servicing, and the owner of the organization company that's providing the product. How do the perspectives differ so that when you do that 2 + 2 = 4 on the paper, facts are facts, you bridge the perspectives, or maybe bring them together a little bit.
Right. So I try to bring them together. And then both of them are not going to love what I do. So when I'm with the client, right, like there's budgets.
Right.
Right. So right. You have $100.
Right.
You have to maximize that $100.
Right.
So I might tell the customer, you know, the higher ups might say, this is the product we're putting in. And I'm like, well, maybe that's not the best product. Because that product, yes, it's in the budget, but then when you bring labor into it, we go over budget. So gotcha. We have to find a product maybe with a little less labor. Not that I have blue collar roots. I do want to help my installers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want them to make their money. But if we don't sell the job, Lou,
well, you know,
nobody gets anything.
You know where the trade-offs are between these factors.
Correct. So my job is to keep the labor cost reasonable and the product reasonable, right? So I can't have a high-end product and high-end labor because we blow the budget out. So we got to lower both and find that happy balance, right?
Right.
Here's my customer and his budget.
Right.
And here's the owner of the company that's trying to maximize profits.
Right, right, right.
So it's a fun dance. And what I'll try and do is, and I usually come up with a solution that will work for both, right? I just want to make sure the customer's happy at the end of the day, because without our customers, that goes for everybody, would not work.
Well, and how much is it the case that there's a longer-term relationship than that one deal, that one installation at that one time? I mean, how does that figure into the way you try to bridge them and change perspectives so that they're probably going to have to accept something that you're proposing that wasn't what they thought.
What they first imagined.
Right.
From both of them.
Right.
From both of them.
Right.
Right? From the client and from the owner of the company.
And let me ask you this question. Do they see that trade-off in the context of a better relationship? Like, oh, we could be in a relationship, a business relationship for a number of years, and that's got value in it.
It's a tremendous amount of value. Lou, the client doesn't want to be disregarded. Like, here's my proposal. You know, I hope you like it. Good luck. When you spend some time with a client, and let them know what you're going to do and why you're doing it.
Yeah.
It goes miles and miles. I can't tell you how many meetings I've walked away with a client and they're like, wow, I thought I knew a lot about this. Uh-huh. And I'm like, yeah, but like, let's just say a school project. I'm like, remember, this is all I do. You have to do the whole school, right?
Yeah,
you have
right.
to worry about janitorial supplies, cleaning walls, getting kids to class. And,
yeah.
and you got a million things. I get to focus in this
yeah.
one lane for the most part. I mean, yeah. I have multiple lanes, but this is what I do. And I do my research before I see a customer. I find out what the local rebates, because I'll base a product based
yeah.
on rebate.
Yeah.
Right. So sometimes you'll pick a light fixture, but there's maybe that utility doesn't have a great program for light
that
rebates.
Light. Right. Right.
Right. And right. a light fixture, a whole fixture is a lot more expensive than a lamp, a
yeah.
bulb,
yeah.
you know, or a replacement, but, or vice versa.
Right.
You know, maybe they thought, hey, I'm just going to change all the bulbs
right.
slash in my, in lamps in my place and call it a day. And I'm like, well, maybe you want to go to a brand new fixture.
Right.
Because I can get you 60% of the money from a utility. So it's just finding that happy medium for the customer. And like I said, for the client. But like I said, when I, if I sold it to the customer, now I got to go tell the boss or the owner of the company, hey, they, we got to shift this a little because otherwise we could lose this project altogether.
Right.
Then I have to sell this to them, but for, it's different perspective, right? It's a different point of view. Listen, I, you have to sell the client first, right? You have to have a client to sell something to. So once we put this all together, and then I walk through all the steps with the customer, and I tell them, I try to explain the whole process to them, how it works with whether it's the rebate company or the contracting, right? Because now when you're working in an area, another thing, part of the labor side, you got to bring people in after hours.
Yeah.
Right. So let's go to a school or a warehouse or whatever. You can't be driving a scissor lift around or having construction
right.
around people that are working or
right.
walking in a hallway.
Right.
Right. So that's the other thing. It, you know, when you work after hours, it's more money.
Right.
Right.
And right.
So,
and these are things, these are the kinds of things that somebody on the client side wouldn't necessarily know.
No. No.
They wouldn't necessarily be thinking about, they wouldn't have factored in. So I could imagine a number of aha moments that you they have talking with you.
Yes. And then I'll just educate them more on product. I mean, listen, the first thing I want to hear when I sit down with a client, I mean, it's easier for me when a client's educated about what they're doing.
Right. right?
Because I don't have to start at A, you know, A through Z. I can start at G or
right.
H, you
right.
know, gauge
right.
based on the conversation.
Right.
So once I gauge them and figure out where we're at, and then I'll walk them through the site, where, you know, wherever the site might be. And then, hey, this is what I would do. And a lot of times what I'll do, Lou, somebody says, okay, I want to change all the lights inside of my building. You know, and I'll have the email or the report saying what the customer wants, all their contact information. I'll try and get to the customer's location an hour early.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had asked for the inside,
You walk it?
I walk it or drive the
yeah.
the site, depending
yeah.
what it is. Because they might not realize if they needed outside lighting too. And then I don't convolute the two. I say, hey,
right.
here's the proposal.
Right.
Once we get on the same page, here's the proposal for this. But, hey, you might want to take a look at your outside lighting. The rebates are really good, or you don't have time clocks on your fixtures and they're burning 24
all day long, right, right?
Right. Like simple things. And they're like, wow, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't do it then, Lou.
Right.
But it's in the back of their head, especially
right.
when I spit a report out saying, hey, if you spend what's called $50,000 and I'm going to save you $2,000 a month.
Right.
We can do that project next year.
Right.
Right. What I'm doing, Lou, is planting seeds. Right? Sometimes they grow a little, sometimes they don't.
Well, you know, the thing is that a client, any client's got a project budget, but they've got the whole budget and all of the, for all the operations, right?
Which right.
they're always balancing a lot of things. They might not have at all thought about the cost of their outdoor lighting right now because they have it in their head indoor. You're coming in to talk about indoor.
Right.
When you point out the opportunity, and they rethink it. Like, it's like a recalculation, right? That perspective shift is just, okay, well, I hadn't thought about that. And they might say, I don't have the budget for, I'm interested, I don't have the budget for that. Now, what if, Billy, what if we did it in a year? Would the rebates still be there? Right, let's just say there. Now they're wondering, they're thinking, would the rebate still be there? You might say, I'll check with the utility, because you don't know, right?
Right. So it's a great question, Lou, and that's a lot of the questions they'll ask, and you don't know, right? Because they have a certain budget for the year.
Yeah.
What time of the year I am with you. Sometimes I'll know. Like, let's say, I mean, today, Lou, we're in the beginning of November. Most of the utilities are gearing up for next year's rebates.
Yeah.
And they will send something out, you know, like a pre-sale sheet saying, yeah, hey, this is what it's going to be next year.
Yeah.
So, and that's really good information to have, right, Lou? So yeah, if you had a fixture that was getting a $20 rebate and it's going to go down to 10, they're going to be like, oh,
right,
if they have 1,000 fixtures,
right,
that's 10 grand they're leaving on the table.
Yeah.
Right. So it's almost like another sales angle. But so it depends what part of the year it is. And some of them do it, you know, biannually. They'll change the program. Right.
Right.
So January 1st and July 1st or something.
You know, I think it's really interesting. So if you're going to see a customer who's already made a purchase decision, they want to replace the indoor lights.
They know what they want. Right. Yeah. They know what they want, or they think they know what they want.
Right. But you're also helping them make sense of additional thing, additional factors, additional information. I don't want to say you change the picture on them. It sounds
right. Right. We're not going to do bait and switch on them.
No.
Right.
Right.
So Lou, when I first go in, like I said, let's pretend we stick with that scenario where they wanted the inside lighting done. I do the outside perimeter thing. I go in. I don't start out the meeting
Hey,
by the way,
I was
stalking you an hour earlier and driving around, and security had to stop me. So I bring that in at the end.
Right.
I am there for their manger and concern, right? Because I might be just talking to the maintenance guy or the facility guy.
That's true.
And his boss said, I need these inside lights. He don't care about outside lighting.
Yeah.
Right? So I am there for what their main concern was, address their trouble areas, and let's figure out what we really want to do. And then that's something I throw in at the end. Like, hey, maybe you want to bring this in. And by that time, they've told me, hey, my boss, Joe, says this is what we're looking. Hey, maybe show Joe this for future.
Yeah.
I said, and then when I leave, I put a day or two, depending on the size of the project, I give them a proposal. It's just a little caveat to add on because, like I said, that guy might just be focused on what his boss, and that's what he should be focused on, what his boss tells him.
But I like the idea of, I think providing the additional information and shifting the perspective, like you said, it's not a bait and switch. You're talking to them about the need they have. You're offering a solution to the need that they perceive, or even within the scope of the indoor lighting. If they're not thinking about, we already touched on this, the rebates. If they're not thinking about the labor, if they're not thinking about costs that are real costs, you know how people are. Sometimes we get a little tunnel vision. It's kind of a mental accounting we do. Somebody could have Googled the cost of light fixtures, and they got 1,000, and they do the math, and they think that's ballpark what they're going to, right?
Right. This is my budget, right? Right. So Google's great, Lou, and it's also awful, right? Oh, you give me a quote for $40 on this. Like, look, I can buy it from Amazon for $25. And I'm like, all right, did you do your research on the fixture, right? Does it have all the requirements? Is it UL listed? It very well could.
What's the warranty on it? Yeah.
Right. Right. And who do you go for the warranty?
Right.
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 Good luck. Right?
Going to Amazon.
Right. Exactly. So that company ABC changed its name to DEF after it sold 100,000 of those units. And Lou, I'm not saying everything you buy online.
No.
Right. Like, no. But
these are the factors that you know about that they're not thinking.
Right. And I got to fight this when a guy says, hey, look, here it is. This is what it costs. And I'm like, okay, you know. And then, I'm there to educate them, right? And then, Lou, if you can win one out of four jobs or one out of 10, you know, depending on what industry and where you're at, you're doing good. Right, you're not going to win every job you go
right,
to.
Right,
right,
right.
If you did, you're probably selling yourself a little too short.
You got some batting average. Yeah, you're right.
Right. So, it's about educating the customer. But I'm okay with them doing their homework because then
that's okay. Yeah.
Right. Then I have some apples and oranges to compare.
Right. Right. Right.
Right. And right. Say, hey, listen, I've said, wow, that's a really good deal. That has all that. And if I know the person I'm working for, the manufacturer I'm working for, can't go to that bottom line, I tell him straight up, listen, I can't beat it.
Right.
Like,
right.
Why do I want to waste his or her time or right. my time?
Right.
Right. Like, but I'll say that's a really good deal.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not.
If you know it compares well on all the factors, right, not just price.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, right. You know, like we said, warranty, is it eligible, right? Because these fixtures or lamps have to meet certain criterias to be eligible for a rebate. You just can't buy the cheapest bulb and because it's the same shape.
Well, and you've also got to think about the supply. If you order, where you're ordering from, can they ship the number you need when you need them? Is it one time or is it a phased, right? Those are all factors that have to do with construction that maybe a facility manager understands. A CFO might not ever think of, if a CFO has not done a project like this, why would they know to think about that kind of stuff?
Right. That's sitting in a warehouse right down the road somewhere, right?
Right.
So supply, Lou. We can do a whole other podcast on supply.
Well, especially the last couple of years.
Right. So the last 6 months to a year has been devastating to supply. And listen, Lou, I don't have the numbers. I'm not a super fact. I'm giving you ballpark numbers. The company I work for right now has anywhere on a daily basis between 60 and 140 foot containers floating.
Yeah.
In the port of LA.
Yeah. So I want you to say what that means, because I know I've read, not about lighting fixtures, but I've read that
generally. But it's supply in general, right?
It's
just not lighting fixtures sitting there.
So what I think what the situation is, the docks are full, stuff's not getting shipped out and on the road fast enough, right? So when you said floating, you literally meant there are ships
floating.
Stacked up outside the port.
Yes.
They can't unload.
Right. So from what I hear, and like I said, once in a while I'll get a news flash or I'll hear it from somebody I work with. You know, the company I work for, we have two phone calls a day, just updating us on supply, inventory, pricing. And we do have like a dedicated team just to track that inventory.
Yeah.
Right. So like this morning they were excited because 20 of the containers are on dry land.
Yeah.
Because they might have been floating out there for 2 weeks waiting to get into the port.
Yeah.
They made it to dry land. And just because it's on dry land doesn't mean
it's on the way to you.
It's getting shipped out
right.
a day later. But it's one step closer,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So, like I said, can you imagine this 20, 30, 40 boats out there with, and I don't know how many, you've seen a container
They're
boat.
Huge.
Was there 500 containers, 1,000 containers just floating there?
Yeah.
So, and this is what I've heard, though, because I don't want anybody fact-checking me and cutting my head off, is, so think about these big boats. Do you think they planned on floating around for an extra 2, 3, 4 weeks? I heard that, they have X amount of food and water on that boat, right? They're supposed to dock, reload for the trip back.
Yeah.
You know, food, water, and whatever other containers they're going to bring back to their prospective port.
Right.
From what I've heard, they have to helicopter food and water to them.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, they have to eat.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
So what do you think that does to the price of the container?
Yeah.
So.
No doubt.
A ballpark figure, Lou. Like I said, I don't speak with our accounting team, but I hear the ballpark figures up there. From China to Port of L.A., a 40-foot container would normally cost in the $4,000 range. Today, it's $8, $12, $16,
$20,000. Wow.
Right? So I guess they make a priority list, but just because you paid $12,000 or $16,000, they don't wave the boat in. Right? So when it gets to dry land, I guess that's when you get prioritized.
Yeah, geez.
But so to get a customer on the same page, like, they don't want to hear about your supply issues. Mm-mm. You should have this product. You're trying to sell me this product.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah. So forecasting is humongous right now.
Yeah. So let's shift a little bit here. There's some always interesting human dynamics in the things that we're talking about. And you use the word negotiation. Sometimes you might even do a little mediation, right? You might be able to try to problem solve between a couple of parties. Not even necessarily your company, which is supplying you and the client, maybe within the client organization, finance and facilities or safety.
Right.
Right. There's some safety issues around lighting. Not that the lights are unsafe, but the location of the lighting and the lighting fixtures and the emergency lights. Right. You might have been doing some negotiating between people. Right.
Right. So when you think about a job, Lou, right? So I go meet with the maintenance guy. The maintenance guy doesn't write the check.
Right.
Right? So he's got to report to his boss. Let's say we're all on the same page. He's interested in what I have to give him. I give him a proposal. He's got to give it to his boss.
Yeah.
Right? Then there's another meeting where I'll sit down with the guy I first met.
Yeah.
With his boss.
Yeah.
And then the CFO.
Uh-huh.
Right? The bean counter is in the house.
Now you got more.
Right?
Yep.
But I'm okay with bean counters because, right, like in part of the proposals or whatever we put together, we're going to tell you how much money you can save. So bean counter or the accountant wants to know the return on investment.
Sure, exactly.
Right? The maintenance guy could care less about the return on investment.
He'd like to know, right? How much he's going to have to work on the damn fixtures, right? What's the maintenance on them? What's the replacement schedule? Right.
Right. He's got to change bulbs, ballast, this and that. He can't wait to get the lights in. He would write me the check right there and then if he had the authority.
He could, right.
Right. So there's a process, right? Let's stick to the client side of the organization, right? So you have the maintenance or the facility manager, maintenance guy, the owner of the company, the CFO. And then you have logistics to bring into this too. Forget about the supply thing. Let's stay away. Where are we going to store all this stuff?
Yeah. Right. Right.
You know, what are the hours of operation? Right. So we have to bring the contractor in, their contractor. And right. He's got to be agreeable to all of this stuff. Right. Does he have to walk a mile?
Right.
To bring a light fixture into a building. Right. Time is money, Lou. Right.
Right.
So you have to bring so many people in, right? The initial meeting that's the easiest part of
right,
it.
Right, right.
Right, because that's just figuring out, getting, you know, me and that guy on the same page, what his boss asked him to do.
Right.
And then, like I said, it's bringing in all the other parties and getting everybody on the same page, right? Right, there's a ton of, right? You have to bring the utility company into it, right? What's the timeline of this, right?
Yeah.
You have to make sure that rebate money is going to be available, right? Because if this project's 6 months out.
Right.
So there's so many entities that you have to bring in. And Lou, you know, when you get 6, 7, 8 people in the room to get everybody in the same, to stay in their lane and everybody moving in the same direction is not always easy.
No, it's never easy. So when I worked with you, we did have a bunch of people who knew these kinds of things.
Yes.
When you're working with some clients, I imagine they're not anticipating half of these things or some significant portion of, right? So who's thinking about, or somebody might, like the maintenance guy might have had the thought and maybe mentioned to you, I don't know where we're going to put all this stuff, or I don't know how we're going to do the demo on this stuff. And like, it's a school again, or an office building. You don't do demo during the day. You got to get it out at night or weekends, and you got to clean up, right?
Right. Everything's got to be perfect
the
next day so they can operate like nothing's going on.
So he or she might have thought of that. You know, you know that the janitorial staff is thinking about those kinds of things because they've done it before and they've had to clean up after somebody else, right? But that stuff doesn't always get elevated up the chain of command in conversations so that it's on someone else's mind. You're probably bringing things up in those boardroom conversations, you and your jeans and your, you know, and like you said, the CFO comes in, or I'm asking you, what happens when you're raising these kinds of things for the first time and their eyes are wide, like, wow, Bill, I hadn't thought about that. What do we do?
Right. Because from the initial meeting, and like I said, because I can relate to the guy that does the maintenance, right?
Right.
Because of my blue collar background.
Right.
Details are important, Lou. And it's important for me to make sure that guy's going to be all right. Right. Because
yeah.
on the chain of command, here's the guy that's, let's just say, making the least amount of money, and he's going to deal with the most amount of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
When this
true.
Happens.
That's
right?
True. That's right.
So I want to address his concerns, and I'm not afraid to bring it up in a meeting. I don't care who looks at me cross-eyed.
Well, you have to have a no surprises policy. You don't want them surprised later.
Right. I said, if you don't want to deal with it now, you are going to deal with it later. And it's if we don't
talk
figure
about
it,
now right.
it's going to cost you more later.
Yeah.
Right? Because everything's going to come to a screaming halt.
Yeah.
When, you know, which pretend it's a school, you know, because schools are very sensitive areas right now. And the guys worked in a room and there's light fixtures and screws and dust and dirt and plastic all over the next day.
Right.
And nobody told the custodian this was going to happen.
Right.
And
right.
he walks into a nightmare. Right.
Well, the teacher walks in the morning and finds all that.
Right. And then has to call custodial. Oh, and imagine this being in 6-8 classrooms
right.
in one night.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You have to address all of this stuff and the fine detail. And yes, the CFO of the company does not want to deal with it, but it's just getting the point across to them. Like, hey, listen, I'm trying to save you money.
Well, you know, that's a
later.
That's a good point with the thought that flashed through my mind was total cost of ownership or total cost of operation. There's a total cost. There's
yes.
not just the light fixture cost. There's a total cost. And sometimes it's money that you're writing the check for. Sometimes it's time. So you might put your janitorial staff on some things, but that means they were not going to do something else. At that time.
Something else is getting neglected,
right?
Right.
So there's a total cost of that operation that is real. That if you had three or four different parties involved in the conversation, from facilities to finance to whatever the logistics, whoever that might have been, I know that we touched a little bit sometimes on some IT networks and what we were
yes.
working together, and you might still these days. And then you might have somebody from IT involved, right?
Yes. And they speak another language that I don't even comprehend.
They've all got their own perspectives. They've all got their own missions. They've all got their own objectives. They've all got their own constraints. They've all got their own resources, whatever constraints, staff, time, money. Sometimes you might be raising questions. Now, I know you have an answer to the question, or you'll go figure it out and bring it back.
Exactly.
But you could be raising questions they haven't thought of. And sometimes that's unsettling, scary to somebody in a position, more of an executive position. I don't know of an executive that ever was on top of a project that went on time and on schedule and on budget. On schedule and on budget. It's just things that there's always delays and overruns. Then they're worried.
Yes.
Then they're worried. Well, what's going to happen? And you're saying,
well,
I'm trying to forecast it for you so we can nail it.
So that was a client that I had to negotiate with. You build a product, right? There's 50 components.
Yeah.
We manufacture X amount of those, let's say 90%.
Yeah.
The other 10 we outsource, and there was a defect on one of the parts.
Yeah.
Contractor had to go back now and change these lights out.
Yeah.
That's time. He had to rent the scissor lift, do this. He gives a price of, let's call it $10,000. My company calls me up because I help deal with that part of the issue. I visit the contractor, and my job is to get that $10,000 number as low as I can. So, you know, I start doing math with the contractor. I speak the same language as them, and I get it down to, let's call it $5,000. He's not thrilled. The company I work for is not thrilled, but that's the part of a good negotiation, right? Two unhappy parties, I guess, but not as unhappy as the beginning. At the end of the day, it was solved the issue, and that was him calling to thank me, and I have to see him in a little while because this one happened to be a Long Island because I've been in 32 states in the last 7 months. I'm glad this one
is
local.
Home, right? You know, the world I come out of with the conflict resolution studies, I don't know if you remember that.
I remember you speaking on it.
So what are the outcomes that you hope for from a conflict, if you can resolve it? Certainly one category is the whatever the issues are, financial issues or resources, time, you know, there's some substantive issues that you were hoping to get agreement on. And you're going to, let's say you can reach agreement on them, but like you're pointing out, there's always trade-offs. You don't get everything. If one side gets everything at once, the other side gets nothing, okay, maybe it goes that way, but then the relationship is done. You're not going back to that. So
100%.
Sometimes you trade off some substantive outcomes, in this case, maybe some dollars, for an ongoing relationship. If you negotiate with the relationship in mind, you're willing to trade on some other thing.
Right. So there's different trade-offs, right?
Like, right.
So when I go to a location, let's call it similar to the one I went to, I'm going to see an angry contractor, right? He is, so my first part is to diffuse him a little bit. Like, I'm here to help. I know you're upset and almost anything I tell you is not going to help. You're a contractor. This customer, we have to make happen. Whatever goes on behind the curtain, we have to figure it out, because I don't want you to lose that customer, because that customer could own 10 more buildings. Maybe this was a portion of one building.
Right.
I want future work out of them. And hopefully in the good faith that we're trying to make a resolution here, there is trade-offs. And
I'm going to pause you there. That's a very important framing. How you frame that is really important. If he or she, let's say, wasn't thinking that, now they're going to go, you're right. You're going to work with him, but what you did was put working with him in the context of working with the client again.
Right, like, because I don't want to see you lose a client over our product.
Right.
I would never want to see that. I don't want to lose
you
a client small issue we had with the product.
Right.
I'm here to make it right. But so what I'll do, that's how I start the diffusing. At the end of the day, we want to make your customer happy, because that customer is our customer too.
Right.
Even though you, and there's so many levels. So he's the contractor, right? So we as a manufacturer, we sell through distribution. So I had to deal with his distributor first.
Right.
And I said to the distributor, get me. And that's the great thing about the company I work for. It doesn't matter where it is.
Uh-huh.
They will have me on a flight to make sure that customer is being addressed, right? And that's money out of our pocket too.
Yeah.
But we have to resolute the issue that we believe was our issue. Because, Lou, I've been to locations where I've flown to the location and I'm like, it was based on poor install quality.
Uh-huh.
So I said, hey.
Yeah.
And I'll take the pictures and document everything needed. Like,
hey, I know you will.
Our issue.
I know you will.
This is your issue, but let me try and help you.
Right.
Right. I'm here. Yeah. Right. And you're not going to reimburse me for my flight. I don't want to lose this customer. I don't want to lose you. I don't want to lose the distributor.
Let's try to fix this.
So like when I deal with a customer like this, it's three customers, Lou.
Yeah.
It's my distributor. It's the contractor for the distributor.
Yeah.
It's the end user for the contractor.
Right.
So there's three customers I can lose or gain in one shot.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's a trade-off. Sure there's a trade-off. Some of them for each of them. Some trade-offs.
At every level, there's a trade-off. Right. So let's start with the distributor. That's who we deal with. The next order that guy puts in, if I can salvage this, he's going to get a discount.
Uh-huh.
Right? Or free shipping.
Uh-huh.
Whatever the case would be. So then the contractor, it's the same thing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's getting the service of me showing up, but that doesn't make him happy but he's going to want a discount. So the discount trickles down all the way. Right. So the next discount for the distributor might not necessarily be for this contract.
Right.
Or this end user. Right. No. So there could be three multiple discounts that we're going to give along the way.
Yeah.
It could add up, but we want to keep the business.
Yeah.
And then knowing not a lot of companies do this, Lou, they don't just send somebody out to address the issue. They'll either walk away from it and say, sorry, good luck.
Yeah.
Or they cut a check and they don't even know what they're cutting the check for. But I mean, that's not good business in my mind.
Right.
So it's about just getting to the end user, because that's all of our customers.
That's the perspective to keep. Let me ask you this. You mentioned when you showed up to meet the angry contractor, I'm here to help. I speak your language. So you started out as an apprentice in electrical construction. So you learned the trade from the bottom up, from the ground up.
From the ground up.
So when you're talking to an electrician, let's say, you know, contractor today, you do speak that language. It was the language you learned from the very beginning, right?
Correct.
Like, how about the business language? Where did you learn that? Because you speak that language too. I know you do, because I've been in those meetings with you.
Right. So maybe it's a dialect of the business language. But so.
Well, you also ran your own construction company.
Yes. Yeah. And it was a small company, and I had it dialed in right.
But you understood. Then you understood the thought processes, the decisions,
and the cost, though.
Right.
Right. Like, you walk on a job and you see one of you guys maybe disregarding some parts, like just throwing them on the side.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I pay a lot of money for those, you know.
Yeah.
And then you're gonna go to Home Depot or the supply house next week, and I'm gonna see 100
receipt for
wire nuts. Right? Like, well, maybe if you didn't throw them on the floor, we wouldn't need to do this. So I'm looking from the CFO's perspective. I'm looking at, how do I save them? I treat the money like it's mine.
Right.
And I treat both people like that, whether it's the end user or the company I work for or the contractor. I'm trying to save everybody as much money and grief as possible. So as I'm sitting there, they appreciate this service. And some of them might, like I said, might not even care. This is what I need. Get me the best price, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then he calls two other companies to do the same thing. Lowest price wins. And
that's okay, fine.
But
sometimes it goes that way.
Right. But there's a cost to service too, right? So if I might be 10% high, but the other company just sent them a flat proposal, didn't talk to them, didn't do anything, I'm probably going to beat that guy up, right? Because they know they have somebody to call.
Right.
And somebody that's going to show up. So, but yeah, as far as sitting in a meeting with the CFOs, I understand where they're coming from also. And I'm looking to save them money too. But because, and I guess I just started out here with Bill Stanton, blue collar guy, walking in. And when I got into the LED game, walking into a random building that I thought needed lighting, explaining myself, and I got thrown out of buildings, which is fine.
Part of the process.
Maybe they, of course it is. Sales, right?
Right.
So, but me being a small CEO, but you still have the broad scope. It's just different commas, Lou.
Different
spots.
That's right.
That's all. So numbers are numbers. That's the greatest thing about, I love numbers. And that's the greatest thing about numbers. They're true, right? Like, there's no... his side, her side, and the real side, right? 2 + 2 = 4 every time.
I know. I remember.
But it's just making sure that the CEO knows I'm looking out for them also. They might not like what I'm, you know, whether it's good medicine or bad medicine, here it is.
Right.
Well, I know it's going to give you the best news.
Mostly what I saw it come down to when I was working with you was that you thought of things that needed to be considered that perhaps were overlooked that had numbers attached to them. So numbers are numbers, they don't lie, but if you have an incomplete picture, right, you don't maybe know the total number.
Correct. So Lou, with numbers, you have to have, right, you have to plug all the numbers into the equation.
Right.
So if there's 6 different numbers to plug in, whether it's cost of the fixture, the contracting, custodial crew to clean up,
the rebate,
missing,
all that. Yeah.
The rebate, right? There's so many things tied into this, right? And you have to think about, okay, if that person has to do that, it's going to cost them money because they got to send a person there for 2 hours.
Right.
Right. So, or if the rebate changes from $10 to $8, right? Now I'm going to go back to the client and say, hey, listen, it's $2 less times $1,000. It's $2,000. $2,000 don't sound like a lot, but it's a lot to some people.
Right.
Right. Lou, you want to send me a check for $2,000 today? I'll send you my address after the cast. But you can't complete a formula unless you have all the numbers, Lou.
Yeah, all the factors.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Right, because you do, the math is, there's multiplication, there's division, there's subtraction.
There's addition, that's it.
So if you're missing one number, it changes the whole,
I think,
the whole complex.
I think, too, what I saw happen when we worked together, what I'm hearing you say is that when it comes down to it, everybody who makes a decision, whether it's the janitor or the facility guy in charge, the facility manager or the CFO, or it doesn't matter, we're always making trade-offs. And what I think you're saying is the more factors you put in front of them and can help them understand the numbers, the smarter trade-offs they can make.
Right. So like, let's just go to a standard warehouse / office space. They lease the building.
Right.
The lease is up in 2 years. They don't want to do a project.
Right.
That the return on investment is five years into somebody else's building and you're out in two. Right. So maybe they want a cheaper, but they need better lighting. Right. So then I'll come up with a cheaper avenue. Right. So, okay, hey, we're going to do lamps instead of fixtures.
Right.
This, you'll get your money back quicker. It's not going to be as nice. But what I'll also try to do, like, I want to understand the customer's perspective. Do you plan on releasing it for after the 2 years for another 10 to 20? Is that the main goal?
Right.
Because then what I'm going to take into consideration, like, okay, do this to temporarily hold you over. And then if you re-sign the lease, I'm going to pave the way for it by what I'm doing.
Right.
Right. So there's so many, right. You're going to spend an extra 10%, but it's going to save you 40% after the 2 years
is
up.
Yes.
So I want to get the whole picture and the whole story. And listen, then I'm going to give you three layouts, right? High, medium, low. And it'll be the cost association. And if you want to do the best, this is what it's going to cost. But that's after you sign your 10 or 20 year lease.
It's just amazing how many factors there are to consider and trade off.
There's so many pivot points. And that probably goes, Lou, that goes for a million products out there.
Yeah, it does.
Right?
Oh,
not everything is, you know, hey, listen, if I need a knob for the straw, I know I have to match that knob. Yeah. Otherwise, my wife's going to punch me in the head. Right? But, you know, but there is so many pivot points, though. So that's what it's getting your customer's story. And listen, sometimes customers have 3 minutes for you. Sometimes they want to spend 3 hours with you. And I can run on a little bit. I'm from New York. You know, so, and I've told customers, listen, just shut me down. My skin is very thick. You are not going to hurt my feelings.
But what I know is true about you is that your brain's going.
Yeah.
Your mouth's going because you're thinking about, you're analyzing constantly. You're always thinking of options.
Right. Because I got to make an option that's going to fit him and it's actually something we can pull off. I mean, so the company I work for, we have really great engineers in the U.S. And sometimes I make promises to customers. And I don't want to say promises. I said, let me talk to my engineering, I'm 95% sure they can do it.
Right.
I think about it from a mechanical standpoint, not an engineering standpoint.
Yeah.
And 99% of the time they pull off my crazy idea, but I know when their phone rings and they see my name, they're not excited. They know Bill's not bringing in fresh bagels and coffee from New York. He's got some stupid task and he had some stupid idea and we're either going to shut him down or run with it.
We're going to figure it out. So,
right. But that's the great thing about the company I work for. Like, I'll tell the customer, listen, I don't know if I know physically it can be done. I don't know from a technical standpoint, right? Like if we custom design a fixture, maybe we can't get a UL rating because I said, we could just do this.
Right.
Or we can't get the wattage below what we needed or above, you know, the lighting,
you know,
the lumen.
So there's engineering trade-offs. You know, what's amazing about this is if we plotted a bubble graph, all the circles of the subjects or the areas, the domains, engineering, manufacturing, shipping, supply chain, logistics, every one of them's got trade-offs within them.
Yes.
Within every space or domain, there's trade-offs that could be made.
Right.
And you're trying to bring it all together. I mean, I suppose every salesperson is trying to bring all of that together in a solution that makes two or three main parties happy.
Right.
Let me ask you one more question and we'll do a time check. In the question of getting on the same page, I like to think about what happens if you can't. And can you, if you can't get on the
can
same
you get,
Good.
Can you get back to it for another day?
Sometimes in like in an organization, which is a lot of work I've done, if you can't get on the same page, what I would want to ask is, all right, there's differences between people or parts of the organization. Can you use those constructively and don't trash the relationship together?
Don't burn the bridge.
Right.
Don't burn the bridge. When I had my own company for a large lighting project, a lot of money and rebates involved, but because it was such a large project for such a large corporation, it takes time, mm-hmm. right? Because there's politics. Now there's politics involved, yeah. which that's another story.
Slows things down.
Yeah. So I started off with the contractor. Then I met with the maintenance, the facility guy. So the contractor and the maintenance guy, they told me what they wanted. I did a full audit of their three locations.
Yeah.
Gave them a budget, put it together. Okay, this is how much the project's going to cost with labor. This is how much of a rebate you're going to get. Mm-hmm. This is the timeline of getting the fixtures. Right, so not all the bottom line dollar, and this is what you're going to save per month. Their return on investment was somewhere in the 13 month
mm-hmm.
because they were a 24/7 hour facility.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're open that long, the savings is 24/7. With Lou, there's 8,760 hours in a year. So
yeah.
I called it installing ATM machines.
Yeah.
Right, the money just keeps falling. Like, to me, it was a no-brainer, right? But because you have to go through a contractor, the contractor has to sell the maintenance guy. The maintenance guy has to sell his boss. That boss has to sell. Now, the CEO is in another country or another part of the United States. So there's so much logistics on this. So they're like, Bill, we're going to get back to you.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, all right, they're going to go price me out and do whatever.
Right.
But that's fine. So they called me a month later. Hey, Bill, we're interested in doing this again. And I said, okay, great. I said, let me call the utility company to make sure the rebates are the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and because they said, yeah, they're the same, but they will be changing soon.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be coming down.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to the customer, told them this. I think they thought I was sales pitching them.
Mm-hmm.
I said, listen, your rebate's going to go, I don't remember the numbers, from 100,000 to 80,000.
Yeah.
And I think the number was even higher than that. I'm like, oh. So by the time that all happens, the rebates change.
Yeah.
Right. By the time they run it up and down the ladder.
Yeah.
So they said, Bill, we'll let you know. This might be a project for next year. I said, okay, I understand. So, I don't know, 5-6 months go by. It's a new year. It's a new rebate program.
Yeah.
I go back to them. I know the door is there, and I know people, I know they haven't done anything yet.
Right.
So I went back to them, and I said, listen, the rebates went up
mm-hmm.
again. Here's my suggestion
mm-hmm.
to you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get a rebate, it's not like you just, the utility companies cut you a check when the job's over. There's a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
A lot of painful paperwork. You know, it's like a small
documentation. Yeah.
Especially a rebate of this size. And like I said, it was probably, I was going off the top of my head, $200,000 to $250,000 in just rebate money.
Yeah.
So I said, this is what you should do. If you get you have to get a pre-inspection. After you fill, I said, I'm going to fill all the paperwork out for you. I'm going to do all that work for you. I'm selling myself. I said, no charge to you.
Yeah.
No charge.
Right.
And this is time and money, right? I'm taking
it
away from my guys. And I only had 3 or 4 guys working. But, you know, they're pretty self-sufficient. So I fill all the paperwork out. I bring the, because I want to bring the utility in. I said, lock in your rebate. It's good for 180 days.
All right.
6 months. So it's 6 months. So we go through this whole process. And there, of course, they say yes, because it's no cost to them.
Yeah.
Right. And you're going to secure us possibly 200 grand and we can worry about it. Sure enough, we do that. We get the pre-inspection. We get the pre-approval. We go through all this. Okay, Billy, we'll keep you up to date. Okay. 4 months goes by. I'm like,
yeah.
Make a phone call. I'm like, hey, guys, your thing expires in a month and a half, 2 months. Listen, you need a lot of fixtures.
Yeah.
This isn't just sitting in a warehouse.
Yeah, right.
Right? And so when you need something from China or another country, well, let's forget about pandemic and supply issues and all that. I need 1,000 fixtures, 2,000, whatever it is. I call the manufacturer up. Okay, 12-week lead time.
Yeah.
Right? Because you have to get all the components, put all this together.
Yeah.
Build it.
Yeah.
Ship it, you know, and then reship it. So I said, guys, you realize if you ordered today, you wouldn't get it for 3 months. So you're already going to be expired. Unless one manufacturer has some in stock so you can start the project. I'll call the utility, say, hey, we're starting it because there's so many. That's how I, so I think it all in total, it was like a year and a half to 2 years. But because I stayed persistent on it, Lou. Yeah.
The people who are involved in this decision making have far more on their minds than this one thing.
Of course. So, I mean, this is a company, a Fortune 100 company, right? Are they thinking about their $500,000 to $1 million lighting product? And that's what labor and everything. I mean, that's one dot on his desk.
They're not tracking it. And so what you were doing was just keeping it in front of them to keep them, say, track. Don't lose sight of this. Don't lose sight of this, because it's now's your best chance. That's cool. That's pretty cool.
So at the end of it, after it was all signed and done, fixtures ordered, I said, you know, if you would have listened to me in the beginning, you would have had your money back and another 100, 150 grand in your pocket. I said, and I'm not saying, I said, I understand how the corporations, and especially bigger corporations, and especially when you get involved with schools, right? Like, you can't just go to a school, a public school in New York and say, hey, you should do this, right?
Like,
the project you and me worked on together, that was a couple years in the making.
Yeah, there's a lot of bureaucracy involved in that,
Like, and that's why I don't hunt that down, but when they come to me, then I go for it. But listen, I'm not looking to hunt in the toughest areas. I like some low-hanging fruit, though. You know what I'm saying? Don't get me wrong. I'll go hunting with the big cats, but I'm not excited about it all the time.
Bill, I've enjoyed this conversation. It's been fun, and I've, like always when I talk to you, I learn a lot.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Lou.
Best to you, and have a good holiday season, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
I look forward to it also. Best to you, Lou. Happy holidays, and can't wait for the next time we meet.
Thanks, Bill. All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
And that's how we see it, my friends. I want to thank Bill for recording today's episode with me. You can find it at iseewhatyoumean.castos.com, plus all the usual places. Send questions and suggestions through your app. Subscribe and give me a 5-star rating, unless you can't, in which case, tell me why. And join me next week when we take another look at how to get on the same page and stay there, unless we shouldn't.